So, hi everybody, welcome to the second session of the Interferenze 2022 panel series. We are starting this session with a discussion with Luz Maria Sanchez, who is a Mexican-born artist, now living between Bergen and Barcelona. Luz Maria has a long experience in working with sound, especially dealing with installation focused on some themes related with violence, for example, in the border between United States and Mexico, and other related topics. I'm very happy and honored to have her at our festival. So, briefly, I will pass her the words to introduce her works to the audience. Thank you, Luz Maria, to be here.
Thank you, Leandro. Thank you, Leandro, and all the team of this great festival, Interference Luminaria. We've been trying to make it happen for so long, so I'm very happy to finally be here and sharing my work with all of you. So, in this case, since the nature of the talk is during such a daylight and stuff, we're not going to use any of, we're going to try to fight with the beautiful light of the space. So I'm going to just going to present sound, no visuals. But if you want to see, because my work has a strong visual component, if you want to see it, then you can just go type my name.com, luzmariasanchez.com, and you will find different examples of how I work with sound. For me, it's very important, the visual too, because I feel like, of course, as has been discussed here before, we don't see with our eyes closed. We hear while we are seeing things. And so how we artists that do a practice with sound deal with the visuals is very important in order to make the public engage with the artwork. So that's why there's a strong component, visual component, sculptural component on my work. So I have some trigger questions that I've been discussing with other creators and in other spaces that I think it will be very good to share with you right now. And for those that have this piece of paper, I'm going to
have two more.
If you can send them to
the public in the back. Two people don't have.
These materials basically allowed me to have like a kind of a conceptual framework, so you know where, what I read, or where the authors that I also try to have a dialogue with. So that's why it's there. And I think for you to take home, and maybe if you are not into sound studies or into this, thinking about how sound can really affect us as bodies and us as human beings in this society we are in, I think it's a good start. So the questions that I call trigger questions are they're mainly for myself, but they could also work for other practitioners. Like, how do we narrate extreme violence without succumbing to its necropolitical impact? How we talk about violence without following into that element? How to make what we don't see, the invisible, visible? How to make the unheard, those things that we don't hear or they're not here to be listened to, something that we can talk about them as audible? How do we bring them over? What aesthetic and investigative strategies or research strategies have creators like myself, for example, from Latin America and other post-colonial environments develop to talk about experience of violence? As Leandro said, I'm from Mexico, and my country, the same as Colombia, started more than 50 or 70 years ago. Mexico now is in a spiral of violence that is very, very extreme. What ethical and artistic challenges do we face? How do these practices intervene in the social imagination? For example, justice. What kind of counter-knowledge do we produce as artists during this process? So those questions, I think, are very good, like trigger to start many conversations around this. So I would like also to put my practice in context. My work, more than being transmedia, because I use sound, I use video, I use 3D prints, like sculptural objects, I intervene in the space, I do performatic events, so to speak. So for me, it's not transmedia, it's more like transdisciplinary approach to my practice. Why? Because I work with people working in social sciences, I work with people working in transitional justice, engineers, programmers, biologists. So in that sense, I am not in the transmedia, but into this kind of transdisciplinary position. And I would like to say that there's all these regions in Mexico, for example, where violence is normalized already. I know the violence is normalized in other parts of the world, but the best way to bring over this proposal is to really be honest and speak about that little corner I know better, which is, in this case, Mexico. And so, in this case, my transdisciplinary proposal opens the door for a critical dialogue on the contribution of the arts to the exploration of violence. For example, sound and sensory practices, artistic interventions in public space, as I said, and how can we really look for proposals that transcend this linearity and have an impact politically and in the affect area? How do we link ourselves to our surroundings? So, this is as a quick intro to for you to understand it maybe a little bit better where I position myself. But when Leandro looked for this title, Listening to Absence, that's a big challenge because absence is the non-thing, the non-person, the void of something or someone. So it's a challenge there, just in the title of the talk. And in that sense, trying to put together these ideas, I was thinking about in the text that is in the program, speaks about the border, the US-Mexico border, and the naming. I have a project, 2487, and another one called This Unnecessary Force, which I will speak a little bit with some detail, and then we're going to listen to some of those pieces. So maybe you can understand really the quick, so to speak, about the artwork I do. So Vis Forza Innecessaria, or Vis Unnecessary Force, is the perfect example of a long art research project I started in 2014, and I'm still working on it. So I do very long projects where, from this kind of art research projects, where I can bring over installation, a performance, or maybe an article, or a talk, or maybe I organize a series of dialogues with other colleagues and professionals from different areas of knowledge. But it allows me to try to understand a situation that is happening. So I think one of the questions, I call it the art research question that triggers the whole work, in this case, is how is the civil population surviving situations of extreme violence in a context of a failed state? It works both for immigration, for the piece 2487, and also works for the way people that stay in Mexico survives. So we're talking about a country where it's not new, it's been decades already, but administration after administration, there's so much corruption in the government and collusion also with the spheres of criminals. And then all of that together, because I don't want to be naive, it's not just the bad and the good. It's like the government is also corrupted and colluded with companies. I mean, it's not just drug dealers against good policemen. This is not like a movie, you know? We're talking about all these kind of spheres of power completely entangled, and where the only one that is left alone is a citizen, basically. So the citizen has to survive some way. So some of them try to go to the United States, immigrate. Some immigration is about poverty, to try to just to make ends meet because of the failed economical situation in Mexico. But some of them are expelled by violence. So we have these two elements together. And the ones that stay, the ones that they don't have the option to leave, how do they survive when there's no police or nobody to go and look for help? And where the police may be the first enemy, or the government could be your first enemy. So it's like you as a citizen are left alone. What do you do then? So that's why this question, how the civilian population survive in situations of extreme violence in the context of a failed state, keeps on putting together and trying to find an answer. So I'm going to play a little bit of 2487. As immigration is a result of a failed state, is about the border Mexico-United States, and it records the names of the same number as the title, 2,487 of estimated people who have died while trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. This was a little research I did in 2006, so it's not all the numbers, it's not all the names, but speaks about the problem. So we're going to play the first one.
José Martín Elías Juárez, Benjamín González García. Guadalupe Ortiz. Alfredo Escobar López. José Alfredo García Villegas. Raúl Castro Ortiz. Rafael Alberto Palma Salas. Eduardo Díaz Estrada. Victoria Bautista
María
Reyes.
Cristina Hernández Pérez.
Roberto Rivera.
Sergio Martínez
Martín
Ramírez.
Martín Chaires Corral. Benjamín González García. José Ramírez Tirado. Fabián Guadalupe Chávez Romero. Pedro Velázquez Quintero.
So in this case, the piece works, there's a website where you can also listen to the sound. It's a generative piece, so it's always coming in a different rhythm and different. There's 16 speakers, loudspeakers, 8 and 8, in a big area, and in the middle there's a bench with a book. The book has a database with the information of all these bodies that were found crossing the border Mexico-U.S. It's a piece that has been installation has been an exhibition more in the United States than in Mexico, actually. In the United States, at least, it works with since we have all these Mexican Americans living there for generations, and at least for all of those that in their back, their family had to cross the border, is a little bit like reminding them about how they started being in that country. So it touches different elements that even are outside of what I was thinking when I made it in the first place. And so the second piece we're going to listen to is also from the same more or less time. 2487 is from 2006. A little bit before, I was living there for a bit in Texas, in the south of Texas, in the U.S. I also work with soundscapes, and we're going to listen one called Rio Grande, Rio Bravo, where the people, at least between Tamaulipas and Texas, cross, and there's the big this big river being the line between these two countries, and we're going to listen a little bit of that one too.
Thank you.
This sound is an 8-channel sound installation. We're just presenting stereo versions of them. So you have 8 speakers, and the visitor, the viewer, is in the middle of those 8 speakers, and so surrounded by this kind of a soundscape of bucolic natural elements of the river recorded there in situ, and then suddenly the sounds of the Border Patrol sirens. And that's because in the border in the US, the riverbank is all full of technology, all these sensors. So if you cross the river and start walking there, less than 1 minute, there's a police there, guard, waiting for you. But not happy just with that, Border Patrol also park their cars, their cars, in the very visible areas in the other side of the river. So in the Mexican side, where people have this kind of open parks where they can go and have fun with their families and have some picnic and stuff, they're listening all the time to those sirens, just telling them, "We are here. We're watching you." So the threat is always there. Even if you're not part of the groups of people trying to cross, you're always remembered. They make it very clear that this is a border and they're there watching you. So that's why I wanted to play with the sound of the sirens hitting and after such a landscape. So now I'm gonna change to the other piece I was telling you about, Vis Unnecessary Force, talking about, I'm gonna specifically 2 installations. This art research project that I said started in 2014 and still going on, as for now, there's already 4 installations that came after that. And I just titled the same, Vis Unnecessary Force 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm working on number 5. And since the question is very difficult to be answered, I keep on answering and trying to find some kind of information through all these different installations. So Vis Unnecessary Force number 1 deals with the way of citizens doing journalism. In Mexico, there was a point in around 2010 and 2006, the president, Felipe Calderón, back then, he declared the war on drugs. That's how he called it. And so in the US was known as the Mexican War on Drugs. And what he did is he deployed the military to civilian positions. So the military suddenly was everywhere. And that started like a spiral of problems with different cities, and citizens were always surrounded by military, and military were, as we know, they're not trained to deal with normal issues of normal life and little violence. And so this mix has been very bad, and it hasn't gone better at all. So around 2010, the president realized that he was losing this battle against the drugs, and so he asked the media to stop reporting on it. And some of the major channels of media accepted that challenge that posed by the president. And that's when the civilians start being their own reporters, because they needed anyway to know what was going on in their communities. So a lot of normal people started reporting about this. A lot of them were killed by either police or by the drug cartels. And this piece specifically brings together, I did like a selection of sounds that people record with their cell phones. So they record with the cell phones when they're trapped in the middle of a shooting, in the street, in their house, in their office, and whatever. They record it with the video, and then they upload it on YouTube. So if you type balacera, shooting, Mexico, you will find thousands of recordings of this kind. Some of them are recorded by journalists, some of them are recorded by drug cartels, some of them are recordings from the police, and some of them are for the civilians. So this selection is just specific about civilians recording themselves trapped into situations. I took the sound from those videos, and then I put them in this kind of speakers loudspeakers that I found originally on the market in downtown Mexico City. And they're speakers in the form of a 9mm gun. It's a plastic gun made in China. And so these guns are made, or these loudspeakers are made to put in the middle of your living room and to play music through those guns. So because there's people that like that kind of aesthetics. So I took those guns and I played those elements through these sculptures. This is the first edition of that installation. And then after that, I start making those same loudspeakers in my studio. So now they don't look so much like guns, because the ones I started with, they were black and brown and gray, and they really look like if you had it in their purse, you will think it was a gun. And now the ones I do in my studio are all white, PLA white. It's kind of a very light, and in a way it works better, because the symbolic element of the violence of the gun in a way disappears, but at the same time the element still there. And to play the sound of each one of these loudspeakers in the form of guns, you need to grab it and you need to turn it on, and the loudspeaker is in like in this side of the gun. So if you need to listen to it, you really need to do this with the gun. So my idea is like you need to activate the thing, and so by activating you have to touch it and be part of it, at least to do this. Now the piece works even if you don't activate, you don't turn on any of them, because you know what it's about. In a wall, it's the same element with the same balance of the sculptural elements is the textural element of the installation. You have big information of each one of those tracks. So even if you restrain yourself of grabbing the object, you will read about 40, 80, or 100 shootings, who recorded it, who put it on YouTube, where you can find it, how many visits did it have when I download the information and my computer, etc. So I'm gonna present two pieces, two fragments. One is like a little mix of different of them, but on the understanding that you don't listen like that, they're not played that way on the space. In the space there are 100 guns, so to speak, silence, and you have to go and grab one and turn it on and put it back. And if you turn all of them on, then yes, you have a big wall of sounds. But if you just pick one at a time, it's just one shooting at a time, one event recorded by a real person like us in their normal life. And then I'm going to present two that are kind of a special for other elements that I will develop in a minute.
Thank you. la Torugue.
So here we listen to, it's amazing the sound that is recorded there just with a cell phone, if you think about that. And when we talk about the bad quality of the machines we have with, I mean, they're really eager to grasp all these little details. At the very end, this guy was saying, talking on the phone with somebody else, saying, are you listening to the shooting here in the city, Changuitiro? And then we can listen how they're trying to talk around the sound that is overwhelming, completely overwhelming. So when I present that, it's not just the sculptural elements and the text, I also present a map. So people can, and my selection is about all the country, so I try to not to demonize the borders or certain areas that they tend to say that Mexico is more violent near Baja California, things like that. No, this happens in Mexico City, Guanajuato, Guadalajara, they're from everywhere in the country, and any person can be involved in one situation like this. So it's overwhelming, violence is overwhelming there. And the interesting thing also is like the first selection for this piece was made in 2014. And 2014 also, it happened something that you may have listened to, because that's been in the media very, very, very strongly, which is the Desaparecidos, the night of Iguala, where they disappear 43 students that are still to be found. And a strong activism came after that situation. The theories about what happened with these 43 students are, they're different ones. The fact is that they haven't found the bodies of those students, but that opened up the door for other groups of fathers who were looking for their daughters and sons and family members. So, but the interesting thing is that in 2014, when I did this piece, there was already two shootings recorded by people from that night in Iguala. So even before media built this concept of La Noche, the night of Iguala, and the disappearance of these students, the civil population was already talking and sharing these recordings. So I was recently in Berlin presenting specifically this piece, and when I said that even before the concept of the Noche de Iguala was built, there was already this, somebody said, no, it's not true. And I was, yes, of course, because what we see in media is something that finally comes up in the form of something, because it has to do with the outlet, the people involved, etc. But down on the everyday, civilians are dealing with this. With no matter if it comes to the media or not, they're already dealing with this. So I have one that I also use for an article in an Australian journal called Unlikely, that you can find online. And I did like a forensic listening practice, so to speak. So we're going to listen to it. The sound is very, very low. It's one of the lowest examples of the sound bites that I got into this loudspeakers. But it's just 51 seconds, and then I'm going to read what is happening in the sound.
Otra vez. Ay. Por todos lados. Ay, Dios mío, ustedes no pueden salir, ¿verdad? No, esténse, puedes buscar
esto mucho.
Sí, hijo. Sí, ya oí.
Manténganse boca abajo.
Manténganse boca abajo, por favor. Hijo, córrele pa' ese pollo.
Puta madre,
güey. Ay, no sé
qué
se ha chillado.
Está
la balacera,
mi papá.
This sounds like a very private situation inside of a house, and we can hear gunshots. An older woman, a man, maybe a younger man, all within an enclosed space, and at the very end some accordion music. And so basically it's the gunshots and then some cell phone rings of music ringtone, and then a young male saying move away, the older woman saying again, this balacera, and she's saying, this is everywhere, everywhere. Oh my God, you can go out, right? Lie on your stomach and try just to stay here. So it's a little longer, but the woman then starts talking to her son on the phone and trying to tell her to just go. And somebody else, another woman says, I want to cry with this shooting. And somebody else saying, calm yourself now. So this is like the everyday on a Mexico situation. And so the last thing I would like to share with you, and just to give maybe space for a couple questions or a dialogue, is a piece called Visions Air Force Number 4, which I did in a visit with a group of women called Las Rastreadoras del Fuerte in Sinaloa, in Los Mochis. I started working with them. I did a phone app for them to be able to register all their searches when they go and look for their family members that are victims of enforced disappearance. They go out into the desert in Los Mochis and they look and dig to find the bodies of their loved ones because they know that they were taken away either by police or by drug cartels. And so when I went in February 2019 to test and the application, the app, the phone app, which is Business Air Force Number 3, I record them going out and looking for their kids. And from there, I did a sound installation again, surround sound, 8 channels, where we can listen to Las Rastreadoras on their exchange, on their day-to-day exchange when they go out and look for their kids. And, well, I'm gonna share that song.
Police!
This is a piece that speaks about how they interact among each other when they go out. And when we listen to the laughs and all this kind of jokes that they tell to each other, we need to think of it. They need to keep on going to find a way of to leave, even though when we hear the sounds of the tools, we need to remember that they're digging in the dirt to find their kids. And again, the whole piece was built on studio to have the center in the middle of that kind of a sound ring. And so let's say all the digging and stuff happens in the middle. So if you happen to be in the middle listening to it, you can hear all of them around you in a way. So Well, I think I can finish here a little bit of what I wanted to show. I know it's difficult to explain and try to describe everything because we cannot see in a sense, but at the end I was going to show you images of how I installed those artworks in a space. But really, the people that is there, they listen to this thing. So that's the main point. And with this, and also maybe with the text that you have there to read a little bit, we can get into the idea what's to work with sound, with issues that are that go beyond something that you can really explain with words. That's what I came here to share my practice. So I think I'm done.
Thank you so much, Luz, for this deep and intense crossing of your work that in some way is impressive in terms of how you use sound for unveiling invisible processes that are material at the same time through claiming for a truth that is not an objective truth, but is like a own truth that you have in a Foucaultian sense, no? And I think it shows how sound has potential of unveiling what is invisible in a acoustemological sense, no? In helping us to know more about the material processes in our world in terms of violence, asymmetry of power, and so on, and through an approach that reminds me what Peter Cusack called sonic journalism. So I have a question before to leave space and words to the audience if someone has some question. For Luz, my question is, so how do you balance this relationship between images and sound in developing your work in installation, but generally in artistic work?
Well, basically, well, here I will appeal to what the curators have been saying about difficulties of showcasing sound. And sometimes we don't find curators are very kind of eager to, I mean, they want sound because they need sound as a genre, but then they don't know how to install it, and then there's a problem. It's like when you organize a party and then you're saying, like, well, why are you inviting me if you're not going to let me, you know, shine? I mean, the work has to be heard. So what I do is, like, I use the visuals as a way of establishing a space so people can really experience the work, because if I throw all these elements on the space, I do it with the idea of having different triggers for people to stay a little longer, because sound, same as of course video, we all know, is a time-based experience. You need to listen to it and you need to spend time with it. And so if people tend to just go, like if it's like a room full of pictures and then just go around, like they just do a glance and go, that doesn't work for sound, the same as video. So what I do is I leave all this kind of element so people have to stay, either to read, and so they're listening, or they see how other people interact with the piece. They need to trigger, they need to turn it on, like this one that we heard at the very end. I have an iPad in the middle, and so you need to turn it on. If you don't turn it on, then you go in a place with 8 speakers and no sound. And if you go out and you say, hey, it's not working, no, it's not that it's not working, it's you have to turn it on. And so once you make the person engage with the piece, then this person stays, and then it becomes, sometimes I even see how they teach the other person that they don't know how to turn it on and stuff. Oh, I did this, come on, you know. Like they start like having this kind of a reaction within the space. So in a way, I work with images in order to gain more space for sound, because it's very important for them to experience the sound. The sound is not something you can experience if you just go in and out. And well, basically that's the way I work, because I really feel like in order to have a discussion about what's going on, at least you need to to engage, it's very difficult to build empathy with in a situation where you cannot even imagine what it is to lose your family from one day, or open the door and somebody comes in and takes your most beloved family member away, and never, you know, ever about them ever anymore. So it's very difficult to even imagine that. So I'm not trying to build empathy, because it's very difficult, but at least to be part and awareness of what's going on, because the only way that the person really starts understanding what is happening is when they are victims again. I mean, in the moment that the person is losing his kid towards this, in this situation of banishing, they call it, but this enforced disappearance, is when this person not immediately is in the other side of the line. If it's not in the other side of the line, how can you imagine that loss? You cannot even. Even if you write about it or read about it or see a piece of news, I mean, how can you imagine that? It's like something that pain. So I think the fact that I have this trigger question that I try to answer the most honestly possible way helps me build over this different pieces. I don't know if I answered more.
I was also very curious with the shooting speakers. I never heard of this. And why did you then make some? It was because of sound quality that you made yourself in the studio. Why do you think it works better as a representation? Because I think the image that I made in my mind is so strong. that's just a comment, and I mean, we can also talk further after.
Yeah, well, for me, working with certain hardware, in this case loudspeakers, visual loudspeakers, is very important. And I used to just go to the market and find the gear, and I have a piece called Cardinal Messages about a Catholic Church cardinal from Mexico, very conservative, and I found this golden speaker. So for me, it was great to find golden speakers from scratch, and aluminum, and so the piece is like a red velvet cardinal color wall with golden speakers, and the cardinal saying all this kind of a speech about conservative discourse. And in the case of Vision of the Force number one, I had the sounds and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how should show the videos, but the videos is really like people running with a phone with them, or in underneath of a table or things like that. So the quality of the video was something I didn't want to get distracted with, but the sound was so important, and I didn't do anything to it, nothing, not even clean it, because I try not to touch. I just displace the sound. And so when I was in downtown Mexico City, I found loudspeakers in the form of grenades or little guns or different kind of shapes of violence elements that people like to have. And then I found these big ones, they're big, caracal mimicking loudspeaker. And then I thought, well, this is it. I mean, this is what I need. And I have to say, they look very, very real-like. And I didn't like the fact that they were so real. That's why I went to the studio and make the copy of the copy, because of course those are a copy of the real gun. And I took away the color. So by making them white, they look in a way like almost like marble sculptures. And I generally, when I do installations, I have people coming over, like opening the studio for like I adjust my piece according to how people behave. So when I first present the piece, I realized that it was for people that had experienced violence in themselves, it was very strong. So I realized I could not impose violence into the public, that it had to be something that they would walk in knowing and willing to do. So that's the way I go step by step, not just throwing all this violence on your face, even though it's very, you know, but in that way you can just go until the level that you want to go, and you can just retreat, just turning off and going away. So I think it's I've been discussing this with other people because they think that it's like a apology. Like I'm trying just to talk about violence by with using more violence, but sometimes I feel like it's not. The piece was just still on an exhibition now in LA, in a museum there. And I just found today this text by Carolina Miranda and Ana Paula Mejia in the Los Angeles Times. And then, yes, first they do they describe how it is, but then they say, at the end they said it really articulated the cult of the gun, and I couldn't have made a better case for why sound can be so visceral as a medium. You can read endless stories about violence, but to hear the sound of a person's voice as it is happening, this is something you will never forget. So it's very strong, and so at the end it takes the there's not a message there. It's just something that is happening. I try not to put a yay or a nay into it. It's just, this is what is there, and you can make your own opinion about it. But yes, I think sometimes I found I have another piece, actually 2487. It has to be played with the very old speakers, loudspeakers. They're white, they're heavy, now they're very expensive, but they were made by the US military by a company that delivers goods to the US military. And the piece has to be played with that, because for me it's important the fact that the hardware was made for that, people from conservative areas in the U.S. So for me, hardware and sound has to go together in a way, at a conceptual level. It's not gratuitous, and in a way, I can say that at the end it works. It makes sense as a whole. The hardware has a story itself. Like if we could go and talk about, like the guns that they were mimicking about from is the Caracal gun is made by Michael Bubit. This is one of the designers of Glock, and he tried to make it as a Glock gun, but the Glock didn't like it, so he had to sell it to the Emirates, and so it's now made in the Emirates. So it comes from a real gun, from real, you know, real life, you know. So
thank you so much, Luz, for such inspiring presentation, and we look forward to keeping on continuing our collaboration. Oh, I hope we can develop also an artistic project together in next year's.
Yes,
thank you very much, Luz.
Well, thank you.